This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three-man front. We start looking at some of the matchups in college football this weekend. And a great guy to have on. He's so kind with his time. He's former Alabama NFL quarterback Greg McElroy, now college football analyst with ESPN. And also, you can see him there on the SEC Network. And Greg joining us on the Natty Seltzer Hotline. Greg, know you're getting ready to head to Provo. I'm guessing you're not there yet, but you've got BYU and USC. But speaking of BYU, let's go back to last week. You had the game there in Knoxville with BYU and the Vols. Just describe what's going through your mind there when on 3rd and 6 with time running down, Tennessee with the lead, you see that completion of that pass.
Well, it's good to be with you guys. It was one of the craziest things I can recall as a broadcaster. I mean, it really was. Like, when I think of what it was that we just witnessed, and when I'm in a 2-minute drill, I don't know if Cole does this, but when I'm calling a game, I am literally wearing the quarterback's helmet. At least that's the way I try to approach it. So I'm sitting there. As soon as I see the receiver deep, I start signaling clock, 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 clock. Like, it's ingrained in me to start trying to spike the football, the air football, if you will. So, and to see Tennessee lack that much poise in such a critical down and distance was alarming. They had the perfect play call. They had exactly what they want. First and second down were exceptionally well executed. And then to let BYU off the hook the way they did, it was just gut-wrenching for Tennessee fans everywhere.
Greg, quickly, have you been to Provo before to do a game?
I've never done a game there, but I've been there. It's a pretty cool little scene. I'm pretty excited about it. And with SC coming to town, Cole, I mean, you know, SC is like the West Coast version of Alabama. It's just really, really neat to do a game of theirs. I don't know if you've done one. I mean, it's something else. I love doing SC games, so I'm really excited about this assignment.
I haven't done SC, but I did a game in Provo with Mississippi State. Went out there on a Friday night a couple of years ago, and man, it was...
Yeah, I remember that.
It blew me away. It was unbelievable. So, enjoy it. I want to talk to you about this Alabama offense. The O-line shuffle continues, but doesn't seem to negate much in the passing game. How concerned should Alabama fans be about the inconsistencies in their run game moving forward?
I don't know. I watched last week's game. I mean, tell me if you are reading it the same way I'm reading it. It looks like Alabama is just experimenting. And they know that their biggest test isn't likely to come for a few weeks. And they're just trying to throw stuff against the wall. And I almost think in a game like last week, they are almost calling things that they know aren't going to be the most effective play because they want to see how the guys respond. Like, I watched it last week, and it was just such – it was so easy. It was as if they were going through the motions. So I'm not that concerned about their inability to kind of settle on a starting five because I think that they're just trying to see what cohesiveness can be created in what are relatively adverse circumstances with how often they're shuffling those guys. So are you reading it the same way? I get a sense they're not even trying right now.
A little bit, but I'm confused with some of the run scheme stuff. I'm confused with some of the run scheme stuff, Greg. There are a couple of new run schemes that have been added in that offense that are baffling to me. And when you get a look to the right where essentially the guard and tackle are both uncovered and you run inside zone to the left, that's nonsensical. I don't care if you're experimenting or not. That's just bad decisions. That's bad ball.
Well, are you talking about when they ran to the three technique side and on the zone inside? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, and they're also running inside zone, but the back's right. Direction is going away from the strength of the play call that the offensive line's blocking it.
Exactly, but I almost think they're doing it on purpose. Like, I know it sounds crazy, but they're like, hey, if we were to get into a run look against better defenders, like, maybe this is something that we might need in our sleeve someday. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's always to the shade, to the bubble. That's where you go in the zone. Like, every time. Like, that's, like, day one install stuff. But it wasn't as if the quarterbacks were missing plays. I didn't see them adjusting or anything. They just probably call and run it, and they just say, hey, we want to see how the guys respond to what would be a less than ideal look if they get it against better competition down the road. Do you buy that, or am I some conspiracy theorist that thinks that the coaching staff is, like, setting them up, not necessarily to fail, but setting them up to see how they react.
I just don't know why you would want to put your team in bad situations and why you would want them to maybe get used to making poor decisions that may come back to bite you against some of that competition later in the year. I don't know.
I mean, but the thing is, they can ingrain it in them pretty quickly. Like, hey, this is not how we do things when they get back to it. Hey, we want to run it to the shade in the future. But at least now they know how they've blocked the inside zone to get the three technique and the strong five. I mean, maybe I'm just overanalyzing it, but I saw the same thing you did, and it made me think that was by design. I just can't envision them doing that purposefully throughout the course of the season, because in that look, if you run that play against that look, there's no way it's positive yardage against quality competition. Now, it might be against the Aggies of New Mexico State, but that's not at all what they're going to see in the future. So I'm going to be a lot more concerned if they run it into a three technique like Javon Kinlaw this week in South Carolina than I would be last week. So I don't think there's a whole lot you can learn from the tape from a week ago.
Greg, you know how things work at Alabama, and there's a certain decorum that we normally see with Alabama and generally with programs in the SEC when they're dealing with the conference. They like to keep that stuff closed doors. So it was all the more shocking when Alabama put out that statement earlier in the week about game times and all that. What do you make of all this?
Well, Alabama is the victim of their own success. You know, that's kind of the first initial takeaway. And I will also say this, that frankly, Alabama, if you put Alabama Southern Miss at 7 o'clock Eastern time up against Georgia Notre Dame, Alabama Southern Miss is still going to draw a significant audience, thus taking away from the Southeastern Conference's premier game of the week. It'd be one thing if Alabama fans say, well, we'll watch Bama for a quarter and then we'll flip over to Georgia and Notre Dame. No, Alabama fans will watch Alabama just because Alabama. Like, they don't care about Georgia and Notre Dame. They do as long as Alabama's not on. So Alabama's kind of the victim of their own success. And everyone that keeps saying, well, LSU gets to play all these night games. Yeah, well, LSU doesn't command the national audience that Alabama does. So, and Alabama, by the way, is going to play on SEC Network once, maybe twice a year. And the rest, they're going to be slotted to ESPN or maybe ESPN2 because they want to prioritize the ratings, because they don't rate SEC Network. They rate ESPN and ESPN2. So to sell sponsorships, they need a higher rating. To get a higher rating, you need a bigger audience. Alabama commands the biggest audience in college football. So I understand where the athletic department's coming from. My wife and my 7-month-old son were at the game last week, and they said it was unbearably hot. And my 7-month-old son couldn't stay for 4 quarters in the game because it was too hot for him. So I understand, I sympathize with the situation, but the problem is Alabama has kind of signed away their autonomy by accepting the money from the Southeastern Conference and from the television network. So maybe in the next contract, they say, hey, you know what, we might take a little less money, but we're going to control when our kickoff times are. That's the only way to really resolve the issue, because in the short term, there's really not a whole lot that can be done. Television drives the ship, and to compare Alabama against anyone else is really not comparing them apples to apples, because Alabama is the number one rated audience every single week. And so is Ohio State, is right there, but Alabama's number one, and they're likely not to have anyone encroach upon their spot in regards to television importance in the years to come.
ESPN's Greg McElroy joining us on three-man front on the Natty Seltzer Hotline. Don't want to bring up bad memories, but that 2010 game at Williams-Brice, you and your team riding a 19-game winning streak heading in there. Just describe the day and what you can remember.
It was a perfect storm. You know, I mean, it was one of those where we would get down there and we would take 2 steps forward, 1 step back. For instance, we would get down and drive the length of the field and we'd score a touchdown, and our defense struggled in the first half, but that, you know, that's no excuse. We got to be better offensively. And we would drive down, we'd score a touchdown, and then we'd miss the extra point. And then we'd drive down and I would take a sack on 3rd and 4. And we would go for a fake field goal on 3rd and 11. It would be incomplete. We'd miss a field goal, a 31-yard field goal in the third quarter. It was like one of those games where every single time we had some momentum, we relinquished it by me taking a sack or us missing a field goal or us having a blown assignment whatever it might have been. So it was kind of a perfect storm. You got to give them credit. They made a lot of great plays, Alshon Jeffrey in particular and Steven Garcia. But that was definitely one of those games where, like, I would look in the mirror and say we had every opportunity to not just win the game, but come back and take care of business the way we expected to. But I honestly hadn't really, like, thought about it a whole lot because why would you revisit bad memories until this week when I've had to do, like, 50 million interviews on it?
Sorry.
But honestly, like, being able – no, it's all good. It's just kind of going back and taking yourself back through the matchup itself. Like, we had every chance to win the game, and we just couldn't do it. So it was an unfortunate outing, but, you know, you got to give them credit, and you got to give Steven Garcia credit for his 15 minutes of fame and for the performance that he was able to put forth.
I think the most unfortunate part of it, and I have no idea why I remember this, and I don't know if you remember this, was what you were wearing when you did post-game interviews.
What?
I don't remember. I do.
Are you going to put them on blast?
He had like a Wimp Sanderson sport coat and a white Under Armour mock turtleneck on underneath the sport coat.
I remember
and
that.
I remember seeing it on local Birmingham news going,
G-Mac
what
pull that
in
off,
the
Cole.
Sam hell is that
how
kid
do you remember
thinking?
That?
I don't know. It was that bad. That's how I remember it.
If you look at our travel attire at Alabama, first of all, we're Nike. Second of all, so don't say we're Under Armour. That's five words. Secondly, what's funny is if you look at the whole team, you have two options when you travel. You can wear the team-issued, quote, mock turtleneck, the Tiger Woods special, the quote, mock turtleneck, or you could wear a coat and tie. And I'll be damned if after a loss, after getting hit 15 times, I'm going to put
September.
On a coat and tie to travel yeah. home. In early October, late September, I can promise you that. So I'm gonna wear the more practical option of the two. And if you were to look at the 70 guys that traveled that day, I would imagine that 68 out of 70 had the exact same mock turtleneck on that I did, because it was certainly the more obvious choice of the two from a fashion standpoint.
But no plaid sport coat.
I don't remember the sport coat. I guess I'd have to go back and look at that, because I only had like, I was a normal college kid. I had like three. Four coats. One was khaki, one was black, one was blue, and I don't remember there being a plaid. Maybe I had one in there, or a houndstooth. I did have a houndstooth, but that was...
I think it was the houndstooth one, actually. Yeah. I'm going to look for it. If I find it, I'm going to send it
don't
to
worry.
You.
Don't worry.
I love it.
Show it to you.
No, it's all good. Hey, I appreciate that. That's the last thing I gave a damn about at that point. I could care less about that. I was trying to figure out... How the heck did we just lose to Steven Garcia in South Carolina?
Love it.
All right, so quickly, you've got the game there in Provo, 2:30 on Saturday. USC coming to town, 2-0. They got a freshman quarterback that took over for JT Daniels. This Slovis kid, he was great against Stanford. Have you been surprised, pleasantly surprised, by how the offense has looked in the first 2 weeks for Clay Helton?
No, I think this offense is just so quarterback-friendly. You know, I mean, it's pitch and catch. And if you watch SC, they might attempt three or four passes a game that travel more than 10 yards downfield. It's all underneath. It's all get the ball out of the quarterback's hands, take advantage of the underneath accuracy. Like, it's really, really picked to create the talent advantage between SC's wide receivers and the teams they're playing against defensive backs. Because SC is going to have better skill. That's the reality. SC is always going to have superior skill, at least against teams in the Pac-12. So what I think has been really interesting is to see just how comfortable these quarterbacks are. I mean, Keaton Slovis had one of the best, I guess, first career starts I can recall. I mean, he was so accurate with the football, so dialed in against Stanford, and got better as the game progressed. Really, in the fourth quarter, I mean, he was maybe at his best before he got lifted in favor of Matt Fink there at the end when the blowout. So he looked really comfortable. Even before that, if you watch JT Daniels in the first half of the game against Fresno, I mean, he looked really comfortable. So I love what Graham Harrell's doing. He's saying, hey, look, we got better athletes than you, so you got to tackle them in space. We're going to spread the field as best we can. Then we're going to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands because our offensive line is not what it once was. Let's put those guys on an island. Let's get them in one-on-one, and I bet you can't tackle them 80 times a game. And that's kind of what's transpired, and it's been really interesting to watch. But they're going to be going up against a really good defense in BYU, playing at altitude, running tempo. You have to think it's going to be a little more challenging to play efficiently within the offense against that type of setting. Plus, on the road for the first time with this new offense, too, will be a challenge, especially from a communication standpoint. So I'm really excited. There's not a ton of sexy matchups this weekend. I think I'm fortunate enough to be calling one of them. I really like Kentucky and Florida. I like what we're going to get between Virginia and Florida State. There's a hand. I like Iowa State, Iowa. But for the most part, there's not a ton this weekend. So I'm looking forward to seeing one up close on Saturday at 3:30 Eastern.
Hey, quickly, about 30 seconds, Greg. Are you buying Maryland?
Yeah, I am. I think they can run. We did their game against Ohio State last year, and I remember talking to Mike Locksley at the national championship. I said, dude, when you get there, you're going to be pleasantly surprised. He goes, I already know. I go, and that was when they had Jayshon Jones, who got hurt. If he didn't get hurt, I think he had a chance to be a star at wide receiver. But McFarland at running back can really run. I mean, they just got track speed, man. And when you have track speed and your quarterback's accurate and making quick decisions, you got a chance. So I think they're going to be a handful for everybody. Shocked by the number this week. I think they're a 7-point favorite on the road at Temple. But, yeah, I expect them to be a handful for just about everybody. I don't think they're going to win the Big Ten, but I wouldn't be shocked if they slayed a giant in Michigan or Ohio State or Penn State or someone like that.
Oh, we've got it. We've got it.
There it is.
There it is.
That is a young GMAC.
We will tag you in this, Greg, and send that out. It's definitely not plaid. I don't even know if that's a houndstooth sport coat.
That's kind of like a micro.
Definitely the mock turtleneck underneath. Yeah. Love it.
Oh. Sorry, Greg.
I want a picture of everyone on the team because we're all matching. It's all about, you know, the difference between me and you, Cole. I'm not an individual. I'm a team guy. I'm going team issued, Alabama sponsored Nike mock turtleneck, just like the rest of the team. I'm not bigger than everybody else in the squad. You, however, you'd go rogue
with a sport coat over it, though.
Well,
the sport coat over the mock is
he jazzed it up.
That's travel attire. You have to. It's required. It's a requirement to wear a sport.
Hey, I'm not mad at you. I'm just reminding you how bad of a look it was. So it's okay.
Imagine him without the jacket. I mean, that's a terrible look.
Yeah.
This was basically like Y2K, dude. It was a trend back then. You just don't remember that far back. This was basically like around the turn of the century. That was in. That was in at that point. Tiger had just won his 14th major wearing something similar. Like, come on, dude. Don't be a hater. Don't be a hater. You're just trying to be a prisoner of the moment and trying to act like, oh, man, I'm Mr. Fashion. No, dude, I was in. That thing was cutting edge.
Great stuff, Greg. We appreciate it. Safe travels to Pro Bowl. We'll be watching on Saturday.
See you, boys.
All right, Greg McElroy of ESPN joining us on the Natty Seltzer Hotline. The hottest spiked seltzer on the market in two great flavors, cherry lime and mango peach.
This is Three Man Front.